This is Eden. You're trying to see if someone will fix it? Okay. I'll try to talk really loudly. Is that better?
Yeah?
You want to move up? All right. Does this help at all or does it help at all or not really? Yeah? It helps?
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, I just need to apologize in advance. I have a little bit of a situation that may force me to answer the phone in the middle, and it will just take a minute, but I might need to answer the phone. Okay. So, I'm here to talk to you tonight about my son, Samuel, who's autistic. And once, when I gave this speech at the end, a girl came over to me and said, "Can you just tell me what autistic means?" Which made me realize maybe I have to define it. But I think you will know what autism was. Raise your hand if you do. Okay, just in case for those of you who don't, autism is a spectrum, and it goes from somebody who's completely in his own world to somebody who has Asperger's, who can be intelligent and get married and have a job, but just not be able to function like 100% socially. That doesn't mean everyone with social issues has Asperger's. Did anyone watch, what's it called? What? I can't remember what it's called. The Big Bang Theory, right? That's what you just said.
Yeah.
Right? So, what's his name? So, Sheldon has Asperger's. So, if anyone's familiar with the show? Okay, so you see what I'm saying, right? He's a little bit funny, actually, right? But, you know, he's a little off socially, but he's a little bit brilliant. Okay, so my son, whose name is Shmuel, is 15 years old, and he's somewhere in the middle of the spectrum of autism. And what happened was, several years ago, my other son came over to me and said to me, "Crystal, can you hear me in the back?"
Yeah.
Said to me, "Ima, I know you love Shmuel, but if it were up to you, do you wish he wasn't autistic?" And you would think that I would say, "Of course I wish he wasn't autistic." But the truth is, I couldn't answer that so quickly. I needed to think about it. And I thought, and I thought, and I thought, and I came up with some ideas, which is what I wanted to share with you tonight. The first idea is that until I had Shmuel, my life was completely different. I was a teacher in SKA. Raise your hand. So I only had two kids before Shmuel, and I was extremely involved in SKA. They had a lobbying trip. I took my newborn babies on the trip with me. They had like a sleepover for the family members, if you remember that. I slept over with my babies in the nurse's office. So I was like super involved in school, and I was very happy. I loved teaching him. And Shmuel came along, and he was my third kid, and he was just a lot more complicated than my other kids. But I did know that he was autistic. You can't diagnose that so early. All I knew was that he did absolutely nothing. Absolutely zero. He wasn't turning over, he wasn't moving his head, nothing. And at a certain point, I realized there was a problem, so I went into the neurologist. She said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Well, when he lies on his stomach, he doesn't turn his head from side to side." She said, "Let me see." And she held up like some dangly keys, and he picked up his head for the first time in his life and turned it to the other side. She said, "There's nothing wrong with your son, you just need to get him toys at home." I'm like, okay, great. I didn't want there to be something wrong with my son. So I was fine, but time passed and she was wrong. There was something wrong with him. He did nothing. He was 12 months old, should be sitting, they should be babbling, some of them are even walking. He didn't do anything, he lay there. I went to Camp Misora that summer with my husband, and my babysitter said to me, "He is the easiest baby to take care of." She said, "I could leave him on top of a hill and come back 3 hours later." She never did that. And he won't have moved. He was like, he didn't do anything. So I realized there was a problem. So I started having therapists in the house, and they all said he was developmentally delayed. And then I sent it to a special school, and he was like 2 and 3. And one day, I got a letter in the mail from the Board of Ed, and it said, "Your son has had an IQ test, and his IQ is below 50, and he's retiring." It said in big red letters, "He's retiring." And I was like, "What? Retarded? Like, it can't happen to be developmentally delayed, and I'm a very optimistic person. What happens if the bus is delayed?" It comes. It just comes a little bit later, right? I wasn't panicking. He's delayed. like, I'll never forget this because it stuck out of my head. She said, delay, make a lot of same thing. And I'm like, oh, my God, you should not be working in this field. And girls, if you ever go into this field, don't talk that way to parents, okay? It was like a big shock for me. Anyway, the truth is, I don't know if it's retarded because autistic kids don't have to be retarded. And in certain ways, he's very, very bright. So I don't know. But I learned when finally, when he was five, that he's autistic. So this is what happened. When I, how many of you have worked in my special needs? That's why I want you to raise your hand, right? When I was in high school, I didn't work with kids with special needs because I wasn't comfortable around them. And all my friends did, and when I went to college, I went to Stern, and all my friends went to Ask. And I didn't go to Ask because I wasn't comfortable around kids with special needs. I did other, you know, classes, but I didn't work with kids with special needs. And it always bothered me that all my friends were comfortable and I wasn't. And one of my best friends said to me, you have to come to Ask, you'll love it. Let me explain. The first 2 weeks, you don't eat any food because you're so nauseous from the kids. But by the end of the week, by the end of the month, you're eating off their plates. And I'm like, that's supposed to get me to come to Ask? And then she goes, let me tell you another story. One time, I was in Ask, and I actually requested the little kids. And instead, they gave me the middle-aged ladies. And I was so upset. And if you want little cute kids with Down syndrome, you don't want middle-aged ladies. Like, you just don't. She said, but I love them. And one day, they didn't announce it on the phone that I should come to the gate because in Mass, unless it's visiting day, the counselor's parents are not allowed to come into the camp. They come to the gate and you meet them there. So she said they announced I should come to the gate. The problem was that one of my women had just thrown up all over me. I didn't have time to clean up. So I ran to the gate, was throwing all over me, and my mom, I know her mom, my mom's very perceptive. Her mom looked at her face and said to her, you have never looked so happy in your life. And I said, that's supposed to get me to go to Ask, but this isn't working for me. So it always bothered me, like, what's wrong with me that I'm not comfortable around people with special needs? So Hashem gave me a child with special needs, and guess what happened? I got comfortable around people with special needs. That's the first thought that I had, because we believe that God gives us things in order to elevate us. The word for like a test is a nisayon, which comes from the word nis. Nis means a long pole. It's to elevate us. It's not to punish you. It wasn't to say, you don't like, you're not comfortable around people with special needs. I'm going to give you a kid. It's not like that. It's like, you're not comfortable with that. I'm going to elevate you and make you comfortable. And that's what happened. So my first thing that I thought about was that I'm grateful that I have Shmuel because it really helped me in the world. That's the first thing. The second thing that I thought about was that having Shmuel made me appreciate like the little things that kids have in development. For example, my first two kids before had developed perfectly fine. I never thought twice about the fact that they can do things. But Shmuel didn't do anything. Every single little thing that he does now is because somebody taught him to do that. Just as an example, there's something called midline, which is an imaginary line in the middle of your face. And it seems that our physicist taught me that until kids are a certain age, they never cross midline. If there's a toy on their right side, they'll reach for it with their right hand. If there's a toy on their left side, they'll reach for it with their left hand. When they get a certain age, they cross midline, and they'll reach for the left toy with the right hand. Shmuel didn't cross midline. He wouldn't do that. His therapist had to hold down his left hand, put the toy on his left side, and hold down his left hand so he was forced to use his right hand over and over until he learned to cross midline. That's just an example. So let me appreciate everything. And my favorite example is like this. Shmuel was like three, and he still wasn't saying any words. But Shmuel loved music. So I put everything in the house into music because he would sing anything. He just wouldn't talk. So everything was a song in my house. Everything, the names of the family, everything. And one thing he particularly liked was this chant that my other kids came home with from school. I'm sure you know it. It goes like this. Hello, my name is Jeff. I work at the pump factory. You know it? I have three friends, you know it. I had a cat, a dog, and a girl. See, my name was a joke, right? See, I said, okay, you love chant that went like this. Instead of saying, "Are you busy?" And I said, "No." I said, and I said, "No way." I don't know why I did that. And he loved it. Until I said the words, "No way," he wouldn't move. His eyes were like glistening and gleaming and waiting for me to say, "No way." So I used this because if I had to change his diaper, and he was like 3, which is kind of big, and he didn't like to lie there while I changed it, so I wouldn't say no way until I was done changing it. And that way he lay there until I finished. So I really used it. So one day we're on a trip and we stopped at the gas station, and my husband took the kids into the gas station, and me and Shmuel were in the car alone, and we started to get like restless. So I started to say, "Hello, my name is Joe." And he's like all excited and calm. Something suddenly hit me. Like, this kid knows how to talk because he sings, so he obviously knows the words. But he won't say them. Maybe he's not saying them because he doesn't need to say them, because we all know what he wants. I'm going to force him to need to say them. So I said, one day, my boss said, "Joe, are you busy?" And I said, and he's like he looked like a baby porcupine. Like he was like he was bristling like that. And I said, and I wouldn't say it. I just wouldn't say it. And he couldn't take it. He couldn't take it. The words were upset. So then he goes, "No way." And those are the first words that he ever said. And I just started to cry. Can you imagine? He was like three. And my kids came out and he goes,
and I did
know what to do. And suddenly there came a miracle. I don't know what it's called. I call it a movable sidewalk. Do you know what I'm talking about in the airport? What's it really called? It's a movable sidewalk. What? What's it called?
A moving sidewalk.
Flight seat, flight attendant seats, and it was amazing. You can sleep the whole flight, And I tried everything. I gave him Benadryl, nothing. I gave him something like natural, you know, like holistic, nothing. I had 2 minutes before the flight landed, and they said, "We are now landing in Israel. You may unfasten your seatbelts." In one moment, Shmuel fell asleep. That's when he fell asleep. So we waited for everyone to get off the plane, and then, since I didn't have a husband, Nefesh Benefesh gave me an adopted husband for the trip. So what you see, if you look at pictures, Nefesh Benefesh is the last day we get off, is me, my adopted husband, holding Shmuel, who's fast asleep, and the three kids, all happily getting off the plane, and seriously making Aliyah. He was the nicest guy, and when he held Shmuel, there was no way I was going to hold Shmuel anymore. And that, it was the first time I felt so strongly God in my life. We got to the airport, we were met there by, actually, Nehuela, okay? They were happened to be there, and the student did not, I don't think she knew I was coming. They just happened, you know, did you do this already? Oh, you're going to do it, right? Yeah. I was on that plane, and they were like, hi, because some of them knew me from SKA, it was so nice. And then I got off the plane, and we got to the airport, we got to Ramat Beit Shemesh, we got in a cab, we got out of the cab, and within 1 minute, my son was missing. For 3 hours, we were calling the streets in a police car. I was beyond exhausted, as you can imagine. I was terrified that he was going to be run over. We found him. I don't know if you're familiar with Ramat Beit Shemesh. For those of you who are, there's an intersection on Lachish, Sorit, and this other school. He was standing in the middle of the intersection with cars coming from all directions, screaming at him, "Get it! Get it!" And he's like, "He don't care less what they're saying. He doesn't even understand Hebrew." And we found him, and we locked him in the house, and we're like, "You're never going out of here again." And that was my first day in Israel. But what was amazing, so that was my first, like, feeling of God in my life in a very strong way. But something, some other amazing things happened, and they all happened because of him. I heard about this therapy called craniosacral therapy that's supposed to really help autistic kids. I went to visit the therapist, and she said, "Okay, I hear about your son, so once a week he'll come visit me." I said, "Oh, forget it. I can't guarantee we're ever going to get to you at a specific time. He's so unpredictable. By the time we get to you, I'm always going to miss my appointment. Forget it." She goes, "You know what? I'm switching offices next week." I said, "Where are you switching to?" She said, "Lachish Street." I said, "Lachish Street? That's my street. What number building?" She said, "9. I said, "That's my building." So she was in, her office was in my building. And once again, I was like, wow, like, there's a God. Like, he's looking out for me. We went to visit her once a week because it was just a matter of going down the stairs one flight. We got there on time. Again, I felt so strongly God in my life. So far, I've told you 3 things that I thought of that through Shmuel, having Shmuel made me, like, elevate myself. God elevated me. I was able to work with special needs. I learned to appreciate little things. And I felt God in my life in a very, very strong way. Another little thing happened that my other kids became much more sensitive and patient people. If anyone here has kids with special needs in their family, I think you will agree that you're a much nicer sibling than other people. You have to be or you can't survive. So just as an example, my daughter was 2 and a half. And she had a mop with very, very curly hair. And one day Shmuel was pulling her hair. But he was 4 and she was 2. But he wasn't pulling her hair. He was dragging her by her hair across the room. Now, has anyone here ever had their hair pulled? It hurts, right? It hurts so badly that sometimes now when Shmuel pulls my hair, I have a lot of patience, thank God, Hashem gave me a lot of patience. When he pulls my hair, I just want to smack him. And I never, ever have the urge to smack my kids. But there's something about the pain of hair pull. There's a reason the Nazis would pull Jews by their beards. It hurts. So Shmuel was pulling, he was 4, and he was pulling Bracha, who was 2, across the room by her curls. And as he was doing it, she was saying, "Shmuel, I love you so much. Why are you hurting me?" A 2-year-old, and I would tell her to say that. I would never tell a 2-year-old to say that. I feel like Hashem gave me Shmuel, and then he gave me my other kids just more sensitive and caring, because that's what I needed. So that was my 4th thing that I wrote. Now here's a 5th thing. Shmuel is extremely spiritual. He loves, like, the holidays. Those are his favorite things in the whole world. he loves most of all in the world, Chafetz Chaim. Okay, so anyone who's not familiar, Chafetz Chaim is a rabbi who was like, he became very famous for his books about you're not supposed to speak badly about other people called Lashon Hara. So my son's obsessed with him, like obsessed. And there's certain books, I don't know if they have them here, that were put out by the Chafetz Chaim Heritage Foundation that have a picture of the Chafetz Chaim on the back of every binding. And to this day, my son will go to the shul and see those books there and go, he just like he's upset. When he was 7 years old, for a birthday present, my parents bought him a stuffed dog, and he threw it behind the couch. I wrote him a painting of the Chafetz Chaim, and he just couldn't get over it. Everyone who came to our house was like, look, it's Chafetz Chaim. Shmuel got it for his birthday. The Chafetz Chaim is obsessed. If you go to my house now, we have Chafetz Chaim pictures all over the wall. It's the only thing he lets us keep up. Everything else is strange. Like any family portraits, they're all torn down. Chafetz Chaim, that's all we have in the house. So I have this crazy story to tell you that is 100% true. And if I weren't hearing it from me, I wouldn't think I'm telling the truth. But I saw it with my own eyes, okay? One Shabbos, I was reading a book, and it was talking about facilitated communication. Who's familiar with that? Anyone? Okay. Facilitated communication is not a Jewish thing. It's in the whole world. Basically, there's this belief that kids who cannot communicate with their mouths, some of them are able to communicate. Can you hear me well? Some of them are able to communicate in a different way. And what they do is they take kids who are impaired, verbally, and they put a computer in front of them, and they make somebody hold up their hand. That's why it's called facilitated, because there has to be a facilitator. And people come and ask them questions, and then they type out the answers. These are kids who don't know how to read or write, and somehow they're able to do this. They even did this with a newborn. They held up a chart with the ABC on it, and they asked the newborn questions, and the newborn went like, it doesn't make any sense logically, because newborns can't even have control of their hands. So I was reading this book that was written by a rabbi, and he was saying why facilitated communication works, and he explained why. This is not something that everybody knows, because it's actually a very spiritual concept. See, everybody has a soul. And what happens is, a soul is like very close to God. And the reason we're not so aware of our soul is because our body blocks it. So we're much more aware of our bodies to the point that we associate ourselves with our bodies. Like if somebody says, tell me about yourself. We'll say, I have blonde hair, I have blue eyes, because we think of ourselves as our body, but the truth is ourselves are our soul. Somebody's whole body is messed up and they can't talk. Their body doesn't make a barrier between them and the spiritual world. So therefore, they don't need their body to work. And therefore, if somebody asks them a question, they can even be sleeping. It's not their body doing it, it's their soul directing it. So what happened was these Jewish parents found out that their kids can communicate with them. And they wanted to communicate with their kids. So they went to their kids with this thing, and they asked them questions. And one of the things they said is, what can we do to make your life easier? And all the kids answered the same thing. They said, learn Torah with us. They said, it may look like we're not listening, it may look like we don't want to, but it makes us so happy. Please learn Torah with us. So I was very moved by that. And I told my husband about it, and I said to him, we've got to learn more Torah with Shmuel. Now, we always try to learn with him, but I said, we have to learn more. The next night, my husband came home from school, and Shmuel was like half asleep on the couch, and he said, Shmuel, do you want to learn Torah with Abba? So Shmuel's like, yeah, I want to learn Torah with Abba. Now, there's a law, because the Torah is so holy, that if there's like a bad smell around, like a dirty diaper, you're not allowed to learn there. You have to change it first. And Shmuel, who was still not trained, even though I was tricked on the airplane, he smelled a little bit. So I said to my husband, you first have to change him, and then you can learn with him. So my husband's like, oh, Shmuel, let me change you, and then I'll learn with you. But he was already tired. He was overtired. And as I told you, once people have a problem when things don't go the way they expected. And my husband had said he learned. remember this. They started screaming, "Why are we doing without our water? Why are we doing without our kids? Why are we doing without our kids?" I'm screaming, and I'm like, you know what, Yahoo? The diaper is not really very dirty. There's just like a little smell. You can learn with it. So I'm like, okay. No, Shmuel, go get a book from the shelf. So our house has a lot of bookshelves in it like this. So Shmuel gets off the couch, randomly walks over to the book. He doesn't know how to read. Pulls it open randomly. He does not know how to read. Hands it to my husband and says, "Let's learn Torah with Abba." My husband looks at it and he's like, "You're not going to believe this." I'm like, "Why?" That was the law that you're not allowed to learn Torah if there's a dirty diaper. Okay, so I was like just very freaked out by that. I'm like, I'm telling someone else told me I wouldn't believe it. I think they're lying. But I was there. So that's just also like there's something very, very spiritual about Shmuel, which is very, very special about him. Is anybody here who can tell me how long I'm supposed to speak? I have no idea. Because I can just go on and on. Anyone? Nobody told me when to stop. Anyone? Nobody's here? Someone? How long do your speakers speak? 10 minutes? Did you just make that up? What do you mean? Are you on your cup? Okay, fine. Okay. Now, here's some other things about Shmuel. Shmuel just has his own personality. I don't know what's from the autism and what's from Shmuel. So he loves the Jewish holidays. So for example, his favorite holiday is Sukkot, when we go to Sukkot. And the whole year he's building Sukkot from wax. He loves Hanukkah. He builds a menorah the whole year and he lights it from wax for 10 lighting. But the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, like he just can't get over that. One day I was really sick, like so sick, and I was coughing, and every time I coughed, my chest would kill. Like it really, really hurt. And I come into the room, and I go, and Shmuel's like, "Shefari." Okay, for those of you who are not familiar, when we blow the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, we do three notes. We do a tikkia, which is one sound, like this. Shefari, which is three. Teruah, which is nine. Oh my goodness. My chest was killing me. And he's like, "Shevarim," which is three. So I was thinking myself, should I bother explaining to him that my chest hurts? It's not going to work. He's just going to say over and over and over and over and over, "Shevarim." It's not going to work. I wish I just like give the three stupid coughs, kill myself, but be over. So I'm like, he's like, "Teruah."
So we hide the apples. He will eat 100
bananas. So one day, a cleaning lady came and I said, I just want to tell you we have bananas in the filing cabinet, because that's the only place he doesn't know how to open. She's like, bananas in the filing cabinet. I love the sound of that. I'm going to write a book about an autistic, a sibling of an autistic kid's perspective called Bananas in the Filing Cabinet. And I'm like, that's cool. You know, you hear me and my daughter. But like, our whole house, we have light bulbs. He's obsessed with light bulbs. If he gets his hands on them, he switches every light bulb in the house. He can drive us crazy. And just, like, crazy. And just to give you one example, when we lived in Queens, we had, like a big room from the fridge until the porch. And he used to take every autistic kid's like flying things on. There's different theories for that, which I'm not going to get into. But he used to take every bottle, jar, can from the fridge and line it up from the fridge to the porch, like in a row. Everything. And the problem is if somebody would walk by and spill something, which would sometimes happen because most people have pickle jars on the floor in their house, so you might spill it, he would go insane. He would bang his head against the wall. And, you know, in Israel, the houses are made of stone, so it's hard to break. But in Queens, the houses are made of who knows what. He used to kick the walls, and we had holes everywhere in our walls because he kicked them. We had people coming to collect stuff from Israel. They used to walk in our house and see the holes in the wall and say, like, why am I in your house collecting stuff? I don't know. So, like, it was crazy. So he would wind us up, and we went crazy. And one day, my daughter had enough, and she found this program online that it was an interior decorating program that you could design your house the way you want it to look. And it's very convenient if you want to do that. One of the things it did to make you feel like you really got out of your house look is it had real foods in it. And you could, like, you know, put like a hamburger sandwich on the table so you could see how it looks if people live there. So she taught him how to make a choo-choo train out of all the bottles on the computer. So he had a pickle jar and the orange juice and the milk. Instead of taking it out of the fridge, you know, our real fridge, he took it out of the pantry on the computer, lined it up, and it was amazing. One day, because then he discovered if you press Control P, you could print it. And then he made a choo-choo train out of all the printouts from the fridge until the porch. And let me tell you, it's a lot easier to rustle papers on the floor when you walk by than a pickle jar. And he would go insane every time a paper got out of line, and it would drive us crazy. And we loved him, but sometimes we just wanted to, like, sprinkle him. And he was just, it can be so difficult. So I'm not pretending that my life's so easy. I'm just telling you some of the good things about having Shaw. So now, there's one other amazing thing that happened. If I really only have 4 minutes, I can't tell you the whole thing. I'll say if I can in 1 minute. One other amazing thing that came out because of Shmuel is that I became aware of a program called Sunrise, S-O-N, not S-U-N, about a family in the 70s who had a child with autism where it wasn't known about then. And they completely brought their child out of autism by working with him one-on-one. And I went to Massachusetts for 2 weeks to learn how to do that with Shmuel. And there's no guarantee he would come out, but it could help you deal with it. And the most amazing thing about the program, unlike a lot of other programs, is that they teach you to love your child the way he is, even if you still want more for him for the future. That's a very deep, oxymoronic, like, statement that I said. Let's say it again. It taught me to love Shmuel the way he is, even if I still want more for him for the future. So a lot of times people with kids with special needs are always saying, like, maybe, like, what if he wasn't born that way? Or, like, maybe one day he'll stop and they don't like him now. They want him to be different. I once was giving this speech, and I spoke much more about Sunrise, to some parents. Just, I don't even remember why. And a parent told me, she called me the next day, she said, you're not going to believe what happened. My son's in high school, and I'm having a very, very hard time with him. And when you said that about your son, it made me realize that I just wasn't doing that. I was always saying, like, oh, I wish my son wasn't like this. I wish my son wasn't like this. And I didn't like my son the way he is. I wanted him to change. And she said, I decided to give that idea a chance. She said it made such a difference in the way she looked at him. I'll give you an example for yourself. I bet a few people in this room sometimes look in the mirror and don't love what they see. Let me give you a few people, what they are. So somebody, a man once told me, the reason people look in the mirror and say, like, my grandmother. My grandmother's 93 years old. She's hysterically funny, but she's very real. She told me her mirror is covered with spit. I said, why? She goes, because as soon as I see myself, I spit her. She's like, don't you?
Chose us. He chose our families. He thought that